for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
California, where is your head at? I do not support a return to masks. I do not support Barbara Ferrar having a job. I call her Google, but I know I'm a mean man. You guys, this is our hour two, and we will be joined in just a little bit by Bruce DeTorres. We're going to talk about his book, which has a very intriguing title, which is God, School, 9/11, and JFK, The Lies That Are Killing Us and the Truth That Sets Us Free. So yes, he is in the right domain today, speaking to people like us. Before we get to that, I've got a couple of interesting stories coming from our neighbors in the north in Canada. 156,000 Ontario drivers recently drove high on edibles. This is according to a survey conducted by the Canadian Automobile Association of South Central Ontario. In the survey, it said that over the past few years, there's been a 10% increase in the number of cannabis-impaired drivers who admit to having consumed an edible before driving, rising from 16% in 2019 to 26% in 2022. Now, to be clear, I'm not judging, but I do think people need to be safe. So this is a concern. It said with roughly 10 million Ontario drivers, that figure translates to about 156,000 drivers who've driven high on edibles in the past 3 months. I do have to commend the people that answered this honestly to get this kind of data. But it goes on and it says that in the past 3 months, over 600,000 Ontario drivers have admitted driving after consuming cannabis, I guess, whether smoking it or some other way, which is roughly remained the same. So there's a lot of people driving high, and that's not just in Canada. So I just put it out there because, like I say, I'm not the morality police. I'm not telling people what they should or shouldn't do, but I do want people to be safe. And because also what the other thing it said was nearly half of the cannabis impaired drivers were also impaired with other substances such as alcohol or drugs. So that is not cool. So don't be doing that. But the other story, and if you'll remember, about a week ago, we touched on this. This is very concerning. On the one hand, they're telling you, please don't endanger yourself and others through the use of psychoactive substances or marijuana or alcohol or what have you. On the other hand, there's this MAID, which is the medical assistance in dying, in which they are looking at expanding the terms by which one could seek medically assisted help in dying. And when we spoke with Andrew Lawton, this new discussion that they're talking about potentially taking place in 2023, he said that when he was very depressed in 2010 and ill, you know, if this would have existed at that time, he'd be dead today. So, and I think that is a reasonable conversation. I support medical assistance in death if there is a irremediable, you know, disease that can't be taken care of another way. But mental illness, I don't think that anyone that is clinically mentally ill should be making a decision of this magnitude about their own health. So the Canadian Association of Chairs of Psychiatry, which represents many of the leading psychiatrists in Canada's 17 medical schools, have released a statement basically saying the same thing. You've got to delay this thing. And they are asking for at least a year of further study that before this is enabled. So I support that, and a person's sovereignty in their own health, I get it, but a person that is mentally ill or suffering from depression or a psychotic break or what have you, I don't know that they should be allowed to have medical assistance in dying. And I also feel for the doctors involved, because what if they don't want to do that, but then this bill and this law allows it? So it creates a whole quandary of situations, and I applaud the Society of Canadian Psychiatry for calling to a halt to this, or at least a delay in its implementation from March 2023 for at least a year. I favor that as well. You guys, Give TNT Radio a follow. We are on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT.
Calling out the big wigs.
The government works for us, not the other way around.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The Big Apple, New York City, has been watching crime skyrocket over the past few years, but will it be getting even worse? Here to discuss it is a person who knows a thing or two about New York, TNT News producer John Matlin.
I'm back, but Michael, before I jump in, I'm going to sidebar. I was not tuning in as I was getting to the bottom of the stories here. I just got, okay. I think the whole world, shall I say, just got wind because at, let me get to you, I want to get you the exact time that this tweet went out. So Elon has announced at 3:39 p.m. I don't know if you are aware yet. Stop me if you are. But what really happened in the Hunter Biden story with the suppression by Twitter, he's publishing it at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Wow. Okay.
Are you aware of that? Because there's going to be some big fireworks.
I did not know. No, this is news to me, and I didn't see anything about this earlier today, so thank you for bringing it up.
Oh, yeah, no, this is breaking, and he said it at 3:39. They're doing it at 5 p.m. Eastern, and there's going to be a Q&A as well on Twitter about all of it. So at 5 o'clock, it's going to be 5 o'clock Eastern. It's going to be pretty legendary, and this is probably worth the weight in gold of what he paid. Of course, maybe not for him, but for society in general.
Yeah,
we're going to learn some deep secrets, and I think we're going to hear a audible collective pop, if you will, a little and it's going to be a lot of people's heads from around the globe that make narratives for a living for their government.
Yes.
And it's all going to be coming down like a big house of cards.
And what time did you say? 5 o'clock today?
5 o'clock Eastern. So that's in 49 minutes. So just
right,
49 minutes away.
Here.
Yeah. So you're going to have, you get to tune into something pretty epic when you go off, but I'm going to jump into the story now. I just needed
Let's
to break that because it's
Thank
huge
you.
News. All right. Now back to the New York crime issues here. So New York City was once one of the safest big cities in the world, and we watched a steep decline in safety and lawlessness became the brand of New York City. Now you may hear Eric Adams, the mayor, often say, "New York City has a brand," and our brand is getting thrown in front of trains these days. So New York is looking to get rid of Rikers Island, the jail that is on the island that is known as Rikers Island, and they want to replace it with satellite jails around all five boroughs that make up New York City. Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, Staten Island, Manhattan equal New York City. Everyone thinks it's just Manhattan. So all of these boroughs are going to have little satellite prisons. So what can this lead to, one may ask? Well, according to a report by the Manhattan Institute, overcrowding in these prisons and the release of prisoners. So the trend of lowering prisoner population started with releasing inmates that had not committed more serious crimes. But now that that population is gone, what will they do with the inmates that have done bigger crimes is the question. The current stats, as of August this year, major crime is up 36% since last year. Crimes on the subway system that are considered felonies are up as well, 40%. The Rikers Island jail can hold 15,000 inmates and usually serves as jail for those awaiting trial. The recent push to close Rikers started with the Lipman Commission. Who are the members of the Lipman Commission, one may ask? Well, among them, the former chief operating officer of the Rockefeller Foundation and former director of the U.S. Programs for Open Society Foundations, which is chaired by the one, the only, George Soros.
Yes.
The new jails are believed to be far short of the needed room for the amount of arrests that are warranting incarceration, because there's no bail here. So there's the no bail. You just get released in general unless it's a major crime. So Rikers has many issues that it's been facing with its smaller population. And one of those big issues is drug overdoses. Hundreds of overdoses and suspected overdoses have been reported there in the last year and a half. I couldn't follow up, but I do remember hearing a story recently about one of the staff there actually touched fentanyl and OD'd and had to be taken care of medically. So there's a lot going on. More troublesome, New York City is still firing correction officers for not taking the COVID vaccine while the jail deals with this madness. This is a story to watch unfold as crime keeps climbing higher and higher, Michael, and I'm not sure really how this ends, or if it ends well. Probably not. But at least you'll feel safe in Times Square as they have those gun-free zone signs posted. So, of course, the criminals will put their illegal firearms in a lockbox outside the radius. And clearly, what I just said is sarcasm. So, Michael, would you feel safe walking around New York City these days?
No, I don't feel safe in Los Angeles either for exactly the same reasons. We've done all that here. We just, because of COVID and overcrowding. So what do? We just let tens of thousands of people go free. And we really did that. So it doesn't surprise me that this is on the table in New York City as well. And when I was reading that article, I was thinking about, well, okay, but if they talk about these new jails in the suburbs, are those already complete? And what about the ones that you've already shut down that you're now discussing perhaps bringing back online? Maybe you shouldn't have taken them offline in the first place.
Yeah, we had a jail here in Staten Island. And when I was a healthcare worker and that jail was operating, the hospital of choice was mine. Every inmate came to mine. We had a little section in the hospital that had a jail cell door so no one could escape. And, you know, generally I took care of a lot of inmates, not too many, but whenever they had their issues during the first several years I was there until they shut down. When they shut down, it became a movie set. And that movie set is for Orange is the New Black, I believe. And
yes,
that now they're talking about getting it back online. And what happens is you shut everything down, you need somewhere to go, and you have to build these facilities. But the thing is, they've pushed down the population. So now it looks like it's not needed to have 15,000 people because they've released so many people that were, in fact, incarcerated. So we have an issue is that after they get all this online and they make it look good, there's going to be no room and these criminals are going to just keep being allowed out on the streets. That is the likely outcome. And in a cashless bail society, you're going to run into a lot of issues. And we've watched it. We watch people attack people with hammers in Manhattan and they're back on the street in just days doing another crime. This is madness. And if this was the exact replica of Gotham City, we have given it to Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. No, this is the descent into just complete chaos that is the result of really bad policy and poorly implemented policy that is the hallmark of the progressive agenda. So now we've got towns that just look like, you know, Escape from New York, Mad Max, every dystopian sci-fi film that you can think of that's just running rampant. Yeah, in Batman films, rampant with crime. That's what we've got.
Yep. And I don't have all the answers, but I don't know why George Soros and his foundation is involved with everything and people want to defend that. That's the interesting part when people like, oh, you know, the right looks at George Soros and they say that he's involved with getting people elected, DAs like Alvin Bragg,
yes,
here in New York City. And
George Gascon here
don't
in LA.
Prosecute, yes, no. And they don't prosecute it. And you know that. We come from two strange lands, Michael. You're across the nation and I'm over here. So you're the West Coast, I'm the East Coast. And it's like they're in this never-ending battle for who can go crazier. And
yes,
they somehow don't cease to surprise us.
No, and the deal is, I mean, when we hear the term social engineering, it sounds like it's part of one of those science fiction films that we're talking about. But no, this has been designed, and yes, Soros is involved with this. They do this for a purpose, and the only purpose that I can come up with is just the general breakdown of the social fabric so that you can move it into something else.
Yep. Well, this is the world we live in, and yep, we've watched it, and I don't know where the answer is because we had Alvin Bragg go on TV and he said that they weren't going to prosecute trespassing and all these other things. And when it came to people fighting back against COVID mandates, there was, oh, now it's trespassing. We're going to prosecute. We're going to go to court. We're going to do these things. Now, most of everything got thrown out. So all of the different protests where people went to the American Museum of National History and Natural History and all of these other things, they all got thrown out. They went into restaurants. They said, well, you know, you're trespassing. That's what we're going to charge you with. But you can't trespass in a public-facing business. It would be discrimination before trespassing. And, you know, it was tested endlessly. Panera, Cheesecake Factory. We go through all of it. And it none of it stood up in court. And but they tried. But they don't try to take people to court that trespass elsewhere because the DAs right. don't want to enforce it. So they're just handpicking what they want to enforce, and it's the liberal policies.
John Matlin, I could not agree more, and that is our Friday news outlook on death culture 2022. John, thank you so much, and we're going to take a break. You guys, when we come back, we will be joined by my second Bruce of the day, Bruce de Torres, and we're going to talk about God's School, 9/11, and JFK, the lies that are killing us, the truth that sets us free. We'll be back.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
See, we're not talking about ideas. It's not a mental game. It's like the, you know, paying $5 or $6 a gallon for gas versus $1.80. It's not an intellectual exercise at that point. It cuts to a point where you gotta make a decision. Is it cheaper to stay home or go to work? Which makes more economic sense? That's scary. And when we're talking about, you know, international events, and now you, if you haven't realized it yet, Ukraine affects you a great deal, every day, all day. When these paid pundits or volunteers get you to question what you know, and you should be, you know, asking for facts on things as they arise. Now, in live events, it's sometimes it's very difficult to provide those because when something just happens, nobody really knows what happened. But when people died, well, we know that happened. And there's been too many situations where the Ukrainians are calling the question whether people were there at all.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can't happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Brace yourselves immediately.
Be a part of the conversation and follow TNT Radio on Gab, Getter, and Twitter.
We can all learn something from that.
TNT Radio.
All righty, folks. I am joined for the remainder of this hour by Bruce de Torres. He is the author of God, School, 9/11, and JFK, The Lies That Are Killing Us and the Truth That Sets Us Free. He is the marketing director for Trine Day Publishing, and I guess he's decided to write a book as well. I'm looking forward to hearing about this. He's also an artist. He is a musician. He is an actor, a comedian, a Renaissance man. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Michael, thank you so very much. And thanks for the great work you're doing with this show.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And thank you for your work. So this title, I was wondering, I want to run this by you. I'm going to say your title again, God, School, 9/11, and JFK, The Lies That Are Killing Us and the Truth That Sets Us Free. I'm wondering if at this point we could throw in COVID and Ukraine. In that title too.
Yeah, sure could. And it's unfortunately a growing title, but those belong, sure.
And so tell us how you came to want to write this book, because I'm guessing that, like myself, you've been one of these people that just kind of had this gnawing feeling for the long time, because I know you came up playing music like I did. And part of the reason I think we play music is we like freedom. And what was it that compelled you to ask these questions, to uncover these lies, to pursue the work you do, and finally write a book about it?
When I was told to study 9/11, and I discovered what a phony inside job that was, Michael, and I kept reading and reading down the rabbit holes where that led. And after 10 years of such reading, I decided to wrap it in some ideas I had already written about energy, consciousness, the nature of existence, very, very empowering thoughts that are very spiritual, very ancient. And that's kind of the truth that sets us free, is the reality of what I think existence is really, you know, going on. There's, you know, there's only one of us here. This is an entirely spiritual / magical realm. The stories of folks, Michael, who've come back from near-death experiences, I always encourage people to listen and learn and about that, because it's so compelling. It seems we are eternal and unharmable, and we are here playing some kind of game, or being challenged to love each other as ourself, classic ancient, you know, advice or help. And so anyway, in 2014, after 10 years of researching these horrors and these despicable lies, I had a manuscript ready by 2020, and I approached Trinday Publishing, Chris Milligan, and he said, yeah, but it can't come out for another year. So 2020 was the first year of COVID. So I wrote a whole new chapter in the book called COVID-19. And Chris said, hey, let's do a podcast. I want to do a podcast. You have a good voice. Help me with the podcast. So now I help him for 2 years every week or so on trineday.com. Chris has published about 160 books. Yeah, you're no.
Yeah. I saw that. I can't wait to listen to some of you guys' podcasts, because I wasn't aware of that until I got some information from you. So I'm looking forward to listening to some of this over the weekend.
Yeah, man, it's such a curriculum, and it's exactly your mission to deprogram people and to wake people the F up about how what's really going on and how urgent it is.
Let me ask you, so I want to follow up on something. We're going to go to our bottom of the hour news break in just a minute, but you said someone instructed you to look into or research 9/11. Who asked you to do that?
It was a fellow I saw on stage at a business conference, a two or three day business conference in San Diego, I believe it was. And he was talking to the whole ballroom in the hotel. And I went right up to, because I've always been a history fan. I've always been a reader and a history fan. I knew there was a lot of corruption and a lot of lies. And I couldn't believe what he told me. And then the next day I tracked him down, and I tagged along to lunch, and I interrogated him, and then got back home, you know, and started looking into it, and quickly found holy F, you know?
Yeah. May I ask, what kind of, was this a business thing? Was this a work thing that this man was speaking at? And did he talk about 9/11 in front of all these people?
Yeah. And it was an entrepreneurial business conference. So those folks, and I count myself among them, are really independent. They are fueled they're fueled with, among other things, you could argue, the power and the motivation of Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. Everything's made out of energy. Thoughts become things. We can create whatever we want. So it was evening, and he was in a receptive place. It wasn't televised. It wasn't broadcast in any way, shape, or form. And he dropped those truth bombs. And it was 2004, and I'd never heard anything like it up to that point. 9/11 was 3 years old.
And how did the rest of the room handle that?
I don't recall anything special, because I'm sure my mind was spinning. So I didn't notice any upheaval. Nobody stood up, or it didn't seem to be such a big deal to other folks. But I focused on him like a laser beam and tracked him down, and the rest, you know, happened.
I was, I'm not tooting my own horn here, but it's just the truth. I was a truther day one, and I remember being not, when I would tell people what I thought, and I was already reading a lot going into this, and that's why I saw the situation the way I saw it. People just, you know, they did not want to hear that, and it seemed absolutely crazy. But so that's the reason I asked you what the reaction in the room was.
What was it about it on day one that got you started thinking like that, Michael?
it looked like a controlled demolition, just like every one I've ever seen on any anytime they knock one down. And I mean, to me, it was obvious. You could see stuff shoot out the sides of it. I mean, the whole thing. And I'm having a Jim Mars. I had long been reading Jim Mars and other things. I don't know. I just have a healthy distrust of establishment and authority. And I don't know. To me, that's just, it was another interesting thing. I had just come back from the UN just a couple of weeks before that. I'd gone over there with an NGO, and it was the creepiest thing I ever witnessed in my life. I didn't like it there at all. But anyway, I was just of that ilk that, and I even, it's funny because some of the people that were on that trip with me, who are also based here in Los Angeles, we talked about this right after 9/11, and this person who I'm not going to say who it was, it's like, Parker, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Like, he knew the same thing, but he's like, just don't talk about it.
What was creepy about the UN, please?
It was the most sterile, lifeless feeling. And this is the one in Geneva. I had gone there as along with an NGO that would take local high school kids from LA to see it, because this person was a big believer in the UN. I went along because I was asked to, and I got a chance to speak, but it was a very sterile, cold feeling place. You know what? We'll continue on this. I speak with Bruce DeTorres. I notice I've got to go to my bottom of the break news hour, but we'll be right back. We'll talk about this some more.
Great news.
The news.
We have news.
Great news.
Great news. Great news.
Great news, my friends.
Yeah. Listen.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Greece's health minister announced that thousands of health workers who declined to get vaccinated against COVID-19 and were suspended without pay will return to their roles. There will not be a railroad strike that many feared could cripple the U.S. economy as the Senate joined the House in approving legislation forcing unions that rejected a tentative contract to accept it. President Biden said he'd be willing to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin if he was willing to end the war.
Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store. We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
All right, folks, we are back. And all that before the break to just tell Bruce, yes, so I'm a truther, ground floor. No pun intended.
Right. No ground floor or holes to the basement.
Oh, my God. So, but anyway, so you were inspired by seeing this public speaker in this entrepreneurial atmosphere. And did you already have feelings of, because you've got also got JFK in the title and you're alluding to other lies. So was any of this part of your framework before that moment watching that speaker?
Yes, because I've been a lifelong reader since the first grade, especially about American history and the presidents. I already knew a ton that the JFK wasn't killed by Oswald. I knew the government's complicity in that. I think I had already read Jim Mars' Crossfire by then. And then on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, every Wednesday night, I was going to an open mic and doing spoken word for 15 minutes for years, ranting and raving about the stuff I'd been learning about the Federal Reserve and 9/11. But I drafted 7 nights in a row about 9/11 on the 10th anniversary. And then 2 years later, I composed 7 weeks in a row for my open mic about JFK, and just kept reading about JFK in 2013, and became fascinated by his greatness, Michael, which is simply eyes wide open. He knew exactly who and what he was confronting and had the courage to do it anyway. So I obsessed about Kennedy for years and then decided to put a book together that describes all this. You know, so those four things in the title, God, school, 9/11, and JFK, the lies that are killing us, the truth that sets us free. In each of those are separate chapters. I endeavor to share what I think is the truth about God, the nature of reality, your real nature, my real nature, etc. The nature of school, as alluded to one of the sound things before we came in, what a crime against humanity the public school experience is, the indoctrination, and just the brutality of the preventing the natural formation and development of human intelligence, souls, happiness, etc. 9/11, JFK, and with tons of resources in the back. It's a short book. It's only 175 pages. And I've got about 43, 46 pages of resources in the back so that everyone can test my conclusions and everyone can see the source information to get persuaded that we all need to do something. You might remember this in one of the great earliest documentaries about 9/11. It ends with a quote just on the screen that says, "Something will happen when enough of us know." And that's why I wrote the book, and that's why you do shows like this.
And you know what's funny is, like, I have always felt that there are certain questions, and JFK being one of the easiest ones, I think, for most people to kind of understand. My analogy is that some things may never be disclosed. They will just be commonly accepted as this is what happened. There may never be a governmental disclosure of what happened on 9/11 or ETs or something like that, or these vaccines, or I don't know, pick a handful of things, but we will just know. And that's what I think that troubles me almost as much, because I look at my kids and my daughters will tell me things that some of them, the kids say sometimes. And it's, I realize that they have a knowledge of things like 9/11. It doesn't freak them out like it freaks us out. They just kind of accept that these things happened, and that is the kind of world that we live in. And I don't know, it doesn't bother them the way that it bothers me.
Do they perceive that the official story is a lie? Do they perceive kind of the corruption behind it?
Yeah. Yes. I say that, not both of my kids, but one, my oldest daughter told me about this one kid in one class, you know, basically saying, you know, Bush did 9/11 or whatever. And she just told me, and I was like, oh, and I'm not saying that he did. I think it's far more complex. Point being that I look at younger kids today, they are not as obsessed with kind of a larger worldview that you and I seem to be. They kind of just more take this as, well, this is par for the course. What are you going to do? And I know that I'm generalizing.
Well, if you are, I don't know, but you're certainly describing the target and the bullseye that I am focused on, which is to the other side of that coin, I feel, is to empower people with two things: the urgency that they do something, and the fact that they actually have some capability to do something. And we could spend the rest of this interview just talking about the enfeeblement of Americans for many decades and generations now. The enfeeblement, you can't fight City Hall. It's summed up in that. And we are racing towards some cliffs that urgently need more people, a critical mass of people to do things to arrest our progress toward these horrible outcomes. You know, instead of just, you can't fight City Hall, it's just the way it is.
Right. No, I hate that kind of defeatism as well. And it's, in some ways, the intoxication by the media has been so powerful, and that people just like, well, the news told me this, so that takes all of the responsibility off of me to further investigate and arrive at a decision. COVID and the vaccines being a good example of this, people were just infuriated by those who didn't wear a mask or didn't get a shot or what have you. But a lot of times the people that weren't wearing a mask or weren't getting the shot did that based upon a great deal of research into the subject at hand and were making decisions about their own personal health that were important to them. But some people, it's just easier to go with the flow, because I think it takes the responsibility off of them to do the work.
Yes. And economically starving or suffering, as we have been for a long, long time now, our lives are filled with just paying the bills, getting food on the table. Who's got time? A lot of people just don't have the time.
Right.
And the most educated among us, who are the managers and the supervisors, they're educated, they went to college, are the most brainwashed, are the most programmed to believe authority and just do it. Oh, the president said this, the governor says this, Dr. Fauci says this, and they roll up their sleeves. And the research is mounting and the evidence in the reporting, Michael, of the enormity of the horror of the harm being inflicted by the vaccines.
Yeah.
And if people aren't aware of Steve Kirsch and his outfit, Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, vacsafety.org, vacsafety.org, or Naomi Wolf's work at dailyclout.io, dig into it, dig into it, dig into it. Because let's talk to the young people you well described. Well, it's just what it is.
Yeah.
If they would do 9/11 and COVID and this vaccine harm, and they did, we can expect worse and sooner unless enough of us do things to spread the word and stop going along with it, and even harder, flush the corruption out of the systems and institutions of power that are supposed to work for you and me.
That is precisely my thought. If they will shoot a president of the United States in broad daylight, if something like 9/11 can happen, what lies would they not tell you at that point?
Exactly. And my little book is meant to rattle everybody's cage who, like me before I researched it to write it, basically thinks, yeah, the government's got some corruption, they've done some crimes, but they basically have our back and they're basically doing good. I am sorry. We are decades past that Yes. state of affairs.
And Bruce, I would extrapolate even further, and I don't know if you're Republican, Democrat, and it doesn't matter. I would say that when you look at these issues, you can also look at why a person like me, I'm very concerned about electoral integrity. One of my friends who's a frequent guest on here is like, Michael, that ship sailed a long time ago. Like, he doesn't even believe that the whole election system is even, they're not even trying now. It's just, it is a fraud. And so I guess what I just want to say to people is that the purpose of shows like this and discussions like I'm having with Bruce and in his book is just to get you to contemplate the possibility that this is far beyond Orwellian.
Amen. And to those folks who hear us and could be persuaded or about to be persuaded, I simply say, get persuaded. Listen to every single interview in Michael's catalog on this show. Look, get my book and look at all the, thumb through all the sources, pick a few of them. And even before you're persuaded, have the courage to bring this up in conversations with your friends and family. Have the courage to bring this up in conversation. Handle these things. This thing called a democratic republic doesn't work unless you and everyone you know participates. And then if you're persuaded, write a book and start your own podcast and start your own radio show and hand out flyers and do whatever it takes to wake up more people, because good things, we have to believe, will happen when more of us know.
Bruce, that is the feeling that I have, because sometimes I do want to just shrug my shoulders and say, oh my God, I'm tired. I can't deal with this anymore. But I know that's not genuine on my part either, because if I were to walk away from it, I would be called right back to it.
Yeah, and good for you. And
you'd be the same way.
Yeah, I would. You know, one of the JFK authors, I heard, he just said, we just have this gene, you know, we just got obsessed yes. about that particular topic or that particular topic, and then inspired enough to, you know, do something and create something like a book about one of these very, very important topics. But you've got it, the knife is at your throat, the pressure, the burden, the duty, the responsibility, the opportunity. It's up to your chin. You've got to care about these. Every parent, you know, has got to.
You're right. And the longer you don't care and the longer you comply, the longer the boot or the knife or whatever it is will be at your jugular. I speak with Bruce De Torres. We're talking about his most recent book, God, School, 9/11 and JFK. I'm not going to say the rest of it right now because I got to go to a break, but we'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
More evidence that the Department of Justice under President Biden is little more than a political arm of the left. You might remember the case of Uroj Rahman, a lawyer who, along with another attorney, threw a Molotov cocktail into an NYPD cruiser during the 2020 George Floyd riots in New York City. The Trump administration wanted to use a domestic terrorism sentencing enhancement against them, which would have carried a maximum 10-year sentence. But according to the Washington Free Beacon, the Biden Justice Department dropped that, and the pair pleaded guilty to lesser charges. Rahman still faced up to 5 years in prison, but got just 15 months after the Biden Justice Department intervened on her behalf. The judge actually called Rahman a remarkable person who did a terrible thing one night, repeating the argument of her defense team. Prosecutors said both attorneys explicitly approved of violence and in text messages encouraged others to engage in violence. And the Biden DOJ went to bat for these low-life punks, shouted from the rooftops. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Great water infrastructure can transform vast areas of land from a dust bowl to an oasis. The Snowy Mountains scheme in Australia was a fine example. It paid for itself many times over in billions of dollars worth of agricultural production in the Murray-Darling Basin. In 1984, at the direction of the Queensland State Government, four of Australia's leading hydraulic engineering firms investigated a revised Bradfield scheme. Based on this study, the government's Office of Northern Development estimated the scheme would have a net capital cost of $2.49 billion and would produce an annual gross revenue, value of production, of $2.02 billion. Therefore, the scheme would pay for itself in less than 2 years. In recent years, Sir Leo Hailsha and Sir Frank Moore have championed a revised Bradfield scheme to divert floodwaters from northern Queensland into the Murray-Darling Basin.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities. The WEF promotes transhumanism. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Bruce DeTorres is my guest. His book, God School, 9/11 and JFK, The Lies That Are Killing Us and the Truth That Sets Us Free, is what we are discussing. And when I look at the book, you have the pyramid and the all-seeing eye right on the top. I just returned from Egypt in September because I have a fascination with ancient civilizations. And have you looked into like the Illuminati, Joseph Weishaupt and stuff like that leading up to this type of imagery being used?
Yes, with great gratitude to Jim Mars, whom I never met, but I devoured his books. And yes, there's a chapter after those chapters on the title. The next chapter is A Brief History of the United States, which I bring all that into it. And then the last chapter is Check, Please. No, then there's COVID-19, then A Brief History, and then there's Check, Please. And I get into all of the above. Yeah, that symbolism.
Well, I want to purchase the book because I know I'm going to enjoy this. And Jim Mars has been a big influence on me. I had the good fortune of meeting him and interviewing him a couple of times. And he used to work in Fort Worth where I went to college, and we didn't know each other at that time. But no, I very much appreciated his work, and Rule by Secrecy is one of my favorites. But all of his work was really good.
Yes, that's Rule by Secrecy. And the other side of that coin is the Rise of the Fourth Reich. And then he's got those other books. And after this show, Michael, please email me an address where I can just send you a gift copy of my book, please.
Man, you just made my day. I will definitely do that. So let's continue on with this, because you and I are talking about the fact that people need to get up and do something. And many of us don't know what to think of Elon Musk, because some of the things he is positive to our side on, sometimes the transhumanism aspect of it is concerning. But what do you make of his movement into Twitter? Do you think that he will really allow voices like ours to be heard again freely, or is he a gatekeeper?
I don't know. And I think that's because I'm at the stage or the age where I look over my shoulder to hear the controversial he said, she said about Musk. It's like, you know, Trump collusion, this, that, and the other thing, because I consider such mainstream hysterical debates and controversies, distractions.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see if we get a modicum of freedom or anything because he's got Twitter, great. Just like Florida might have a modicum of freedoms and liberties under DeSantis, great. I still consider these players controlled to a huge extent. If not, they're just useful idiots who might think that they're in charge of something, but anything that needs to be controlled and steered against us can be and probably will be.
Right. And I always used to say that, you know, I'll take the W where I can get it. And if Elon is going to bring out some information at 5 p.m. today, I'm excited about it. I didn't know anything about it going into today. I don't expect much these days, but I'll take the win where I can get it. And that still leaves a lot of question, why and why now?
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, when one's work is done, it is fun to put your feet up and let all, you know, turn on your station or site of choice and let this kind of wash over you. But it's so addictive. And a split second, I feel myself getting upset about anything, I just turn it off. Because I lived years like that, being played like a violin by these forces that want to whip us up, confuse us, and disempower us, because we just, that's what the purpose of that. It's all it's in a large extent, it's psychological warfare to just have our heads spinning in confusion of what's going on and what should I believe. That's debilitating, it's stressful, and it's paralyzing.
And they've gotten better and better at it over time. I mean, it is highly focused, more so than it has ever been. School was always a place that you would be indoctrinated, but now, with the full-on onslaught through social media, education, higher education, mass media, the whole nine yards. I mean, it's nonstop. It's like drinking from a fire hose of programming.
Yeah, a fire hose of programming, a fire hose of upsetting, confusing ideas and images that really destabilize us, that make us feel unsafe, that make us want to hunker down and crawl into our cell phones, our favorite video game, or our favorite bottle of alcohol, or our favorite other anesthetizing drug and distraction, and just give up and just not care. And then they win, you know?
Yeah, so we can't do that. And the silver lining to all of this is that people like you and I meet, and I'm on several mailing groups related to COVID and things, and I've met so many good people through the show that it reminds me. It's like, you know what? I may have lost some friends over here because they think that, but I've gained new friends over here. And this helps to remind us that it isn't all for nothing that we're doing this. We're doing this for the people that don't even agree with us as well.
Yeah, Michael, you're making me think that the greatest thing to tell a young person or any age person who's just dabbling with being inspired to participate in saving or freeing humanity, here's an idea. Write people like Michael and me and any of your so-called heroes and just say, hey, I want to interview about this, that, and the other thing, and get a few chapters together and self-publish it and join this party, I want to say. We need more and more men, women, boys, girls doing this.
Amen. And speaking of publishing, and that is the beautiful thing about this time, is that we can do this with far less infrastructure than we needed in the past. Tell us about Trinday, that this publisher that you work with.
It is the creation of a man named Chris Milligan. He started publishing books around 2002. And he was shocked to see how many really well-researched books, really smart people came to him with manuscripts and said, I can't get this, my books published in New York. So for 20 some years, Chris has published about 160 books exposing the truths about these kind of things that the quote unquote powers that be don't want anyone to know. And if you go to trineday.com, you can search the catalog by categories. You can find the podcast and all the episodes there, over about 110, 112 episodes there. Little half-hour interviews with as many, many authors, and get an amazing curriculum about what's going on in the shadows, behind the scenes, by the string pullers who have only their interest in heart and are trying to play us like fools.
Yeah, well, that is why TNT is here, and we're all in this thing together, and I enjoy having these conversations. And on a Friday, some of this seems really heavy, but you talk about it also. There is the truth that sets us free, and what is that?
According to Bruce, it's the completely spiritual nature of life, and I challenge or invite everyone to go to YouTube and find this YouTube channel called Anthony Cheen, C-H-E-N-E, Production. Anthony Cheen Production. Many beautiful long-form interviews with people who had near-death experiences and have come back and described what's on the other side, what they experienced, and how that has transformed their life to no longer have any fear of death. The other truth is, folks, is developing a spiritual imagination. I, for one, indulge the idea that I'm part of or an individual eternal spirit who's doing everything intentionally in order to challenge myself not to get triggered with fear, hatred, and competition and anger, but to transcend those child, primitive, primordial, original habits to love each and every one as myself, and to imagine that I'm unharmable and therefore I can do the right thing, come what may. And that truth is also, it's part of quantum physics, folks, and the fact that everything's made out of energy. Yes. When you get contemplative to develop your spiritual imagination and slow the F down, you start to see what causes what. You start to notice the coincidences, and you can cheerfully and authentically indulge the idea that your thoughts become things, and you are infinitely creative, and you are here to create, and we can create whatever we want, and it starts with love and harmony. And, you know, the cherry on that is the idea that all the evil in the world by these rich and powerful psychopaths, at their core, it's because they feel disconnected and in competition from and with everything. That
right.
they hate life so much, they have to try to control so much. They hate themselves so much, they blame 7 billion people. They're the problem, I got to get rid of them. They take no responsibility. They have no conception of their true power just in being. I dabble with this in my book. It's not a very preachy part of the book, but it's certainly enough there to elaborate on those powerful, wonderful, I think, truths that set us free, Michael.
Well, it resonates with me, and I share your feeling about how we must do the things in our life that we feel like we must, and we do need to be authentic as much as possible. I mean, all of us have a lot on our plate, and they like the fact that we feel a bit overwhelmed. But if you do take a breath, take a beat, you're like, you know what? Like, my life is actually, as much as I focus on current events and things that are going wrong, my personal life is actually really, really good. And I can take that into my relationships with other people. And when I talk to people like you and I talk to the audience, I try to have a little bit of fun with it just to give it some humanity, because ultimately I am trying to be an optimist at the end of this. And I think you are too.
I am. I'm trying to consciously parent myself and others each and every moment with every thought, every word, every gesture. Being a good mom, you're safe. They're there. Everything's all right. Restore, heal, make safe. That's mom. And being a good dad, you can do whatever you want. Come on. There's a lot to do, a lot of work. We're going to make a big mess. We're going to clean it all up, and we're going to do it all again tomorrow.
Bruce DeTorres, thank you so much. That sentence, I'm trying to be a good parent to myself, I'm going to remember that. That was really good. Ladies and gentlemen, go to his website, brucedetorres.com. Pick up the book, God School, 9/11, and JFK. Go check out those podcasts. Bruce, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. An honor, a privilege, and a pleasure.
And I will contact you after the show. I appreciate the time. I really look forward to reading your book. We're clearly on the same path here.
Great. Do it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are almost at the end of the show. And I just wanted to say thank you to all of you guys. I mean, I do. I appreciate the people that listen to this show. And if you're listening to this show, that means that you have an interest in the things that Bruce and I and TNT and Joseph Arthur and Hervé and Morich and everybody who's on this, you're not alone. We are trying to find some answers and some truth here. And we are here to pick each other up. And I'm not trying to be overly metaphysical or fuzzy-wuzzy, but we do need some encouragement every now and then. And as we go into the holiday season, I wish all of you the very, very best. Thank you to my producers, Dave and Alex. Thank you to my guests, Bruce number one and Bruce number two, Bruce Gagnon, Bruce DeTorres. Thank you to TNT for the programming that they allow me to do for you. And most of all, thank you to my listeners far and wide. I appreciate you. God bless us all. I will catch you on Monday. Peace.